more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. Well, that was a little more enthusiastic.
I tried not to do the monotone.
A non-monotone?
Non-monotone.
So it would have been sort of a color tone.
Right.
Okay.
That's that would be monochrome if it were colored.
Monochrome?
Yeah. You would go to polychrome or
something. Oh, polychrome.
Yeah.
So you're polychrome. You were trying to avoid monochrome and moving to polychrome. I got that. That's good. Okay. Polychrome, Jake. Okay. Anyway, it really are, because you wear plaid and I wear a plain.
Right.
So
that's how people tell us apart.
Or plaid, as the case may be. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we talk about things to do with the economy and markets and things of that ilk. And if you'd like to join in this conversation, we had a wonderful discussion with Vince last hour, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a message from Lynn Woolley, which means he's listening out there. He sent me an email.
Yeah, I got it. I got the copy as well.
You did. Radio in a small market, he says, has nowhere near an audience of 50,000 at any given time. Those are New York City numbers. Okay, so obviously we overstated the number of people who might listen to KTEM. Radio may be in danger from the internet, but AM is no more danger than FM. I don't know that that's true, but okay. Talk is slowing migration to FM. I guess that makes sense. Okay, that's a good start. And let's see. AM radio makes money in markets where the ownership invests in talent and equipment. That may...
True statement.
Well, it all depends. Lynn used to own this station, and I'll bet he invested in equipment and talent.
Well, he did sell it. He probably made some money in the sale,
too. I think basically it makes money in larger markets and is capable of making money in smaller markets. Just somebody has to innovate a little bit.
Managed very well.
Somebody's got to sink some big money in here and take some big risks and try to buck the system.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I wasn't listening to the first hour, so I'm not sure if you covered this.
That's okay. We didn't listen either.
Yeah, read in the Wall Street Journal that other than the U.S., Europe's in trouble and Greece again. But the article said that basically the governments are out of tricks. In the event they do go into recession or worse, what do they do if they're out of tricks? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
All right.
They're out of tricks.
I'm not sure where.
That's a breakfast cereal.
Yeah, tricks are for kids, I think, anyway.
Right.
All right, let's address that. The German government is looking at this in a very different way than it did during the first part of the recession. They're teetering right on the edge of a second recession.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a growing movement in Germany, by the way, to leave the euro.
Right. Though it's not going to be that's not going to happen. It's the Euro skeptics, which if you actually look at the way that's spelled, it looks like Euro septics.
Well, there's probably a lot of truth.
Yeah.
The Euro septic tank today overflowed.
The Euro septic tanks today. Yes. Anyway, the Germans are looking at this in a very different way. They are questioning the tricks that they used in the first time around after looking at the tricks that we used the first time around, and boy, is there a stark contrast.
Ours worked better.
So
nah.
What they did is they cut back on everything budgetarily. They stopped spending, they bailed banks out, but then they didn't reinvest in anything on a governmental level. They cut back. Austerity was the name of the game. And
could I interject something here?
Sure, yeah.
I want to interject that we've said all through this mess that there's these three experiments going on in the world.
Yeah, and one of them seems to be working a lot better than the other two.
And the oddly enough, the Europeans, who we think of as the liberals, were following almost perfectly what the Tea Party wanted the United States government and the Federal Reserve to do.
What's more, they were doing something that the United States actually did do in the Great Depression. They were cutting the budget. They were trying to balance the budget. Mm-hmm. They were trying to...
Well, that's what the Tea Party wants us to
do
here.
Here's the issue, and I don't care if you're talking about Friedman or Keynes. in a bad downturn in the economy, the government needs to get involved. Both of those great economists that are used by the conservative in Friedman's case, or Keynes in the liberal sense, where they talk about, you know, this whole you've got to spend money all the time. And Keynes, that's not what he said.
By the way, officially, this is Milton,
yes,
Friedman, and
yes,
John Maynard Keynes.
Correct. So these are kind of the sainted economists for the right and the
kind
left.
Kind of like Ronald Reagan.
And yeah, exactly. And if you actually read their works, they are really very, very similar in the way they look at the world. But because it's been taken over the years in different political spectrums, it looks like from every political rant that they were extremely opposite from each other.
Well, they weren't.
They weren't. The reality is that in a bad economic situation, the government needs to get involved. First, by regulating the people that led into the disaster. Make sure that doesn't happen again. Second, by extending benefits to people while it's still beneficial to the economy to do it. What the Germans did is they said, we're going to cut off unemployment. We're going to cut the budget back in all government areas at the time that the recession's happening. So what they had is the private sector and the government sector were losing jobs at the same time. The Chinese are the other extreme, where they just pumped so much money in there that they're having some problems with inflation at this point.
Well, obviously, this is an interesting point this week. You may have read this.
Uh-huh.
The Chinese have resumed pumping money,
yeah,
because their economy is not growing fast enough,
correct,
to provide jobs for their increasing population.
They are teetering on the edge of another thing. They're terrified that if inflation runs away and they lose control of their employment, if they start getting high unemployment numbers, that the government in China will fall. That's their fear, because their relationship...
That's what Congress is afraid of.
Right. Well, yeah, but we our government falls every 2 years or so.
Well, it gets propped up every 2 years.
Yeah, we get the opportunity to go in and completely clean house every 2 years, and instead, right, what we do is put more dust in there.
The only institution in the United States right now, well, not the only institution, but an institution in the United States that is substantially less popular than the president is Congress.
Right.
So we, the people of the United States, will promptly reelect all our congressmen,
right,
and nearly all of our congressmen,
because
this year.
Congress is really unpopular, but our congressman is always very popular. Okay, so all of this comes back to the Germans have a whole new tool bag. They just are borrowing ours. And
right,
that's what they're moving towards, because it's a pretty well-known, at this point, failed experiment. Austerity doesn't work in a recession. It was pretty well-known before they tried it,
no,
but they wanted to try it anyway.
No, over half of the members of the House of Representatives would disagree with it.
Right. We talked about that,
yeah,
last hour a little bit, that long-term planning is not part of Congress's... They're just planning,
well,
to the next election.
It's like I said a long time ago, and when I said it, almost immediately, John Carter walked in.
Right.
If pro is the opposite of con...
Then what's the opposite
then
of
the opposite
progress?
Of progress is... Congress.
Right.
But, yeah, what's happening in Europe? Yeah, the governments of Europe are out of ideas, are out of tricks. The issue is that, very frankly, the central bank, the European Central Bank, will have to step in and do what the Federal Reserve did. The central government, if you want to call that, the Euro government, does not have the ability to run a stimulus bill through and pump a lot of money into the economy like the Chinese have done and have just are doing again right now.
And like we did.
And like we did. But the European Central Bank, if they do what the president of the bank, by the way, who they replace every year, with a person from a different nation.
Yeah, it's really silly.
If Draghi does what he has proposed to do, which is if the economy actually slips back into recession, which it's on the edge of doing right now, going in and buying government bonds. If he actually does that, a number of nations have said they're going to sue, basically, and say, you can't do that. The Germans are the lead in that. They say,
right,
no, don't do that, which just simply says they have a very dysfunctional governmental system
very
in
much
Europe
so.
Right
they
now.
Have a confederacy. It is a large confederacy,
right,
that any one entity in the confederacy can veto everybody else.
And again,
on almost anything.
One of the great ironies about Europe It is the ideal conservative government. It is the government that the conservatives in the United States want. It's
right.
The one that Europe already has. The Confederacy, states' rights trumped federal rights in the Confederacy in the United States, both before our Constitution and during the Civil War period. And that's what Europe has right now. The states, which are the countries, have rights that trump the central government, and they can, any one of them can veto the action of the central government. And as a result, they have phenomenal states' rights, and they have tried really, really hard at deep austerity measures to solve the economic downturn. And as a result, they're slipping, and probably, I won't say almost certainly, but very probably will slip in the next month or so back into recession. And they are already in, over half of Europe is already in deflation. And that is really bad news in an economy. We are suffering a tiny bump right now. And the tiny bump right now we're suffering in the stock market, frankly, is irrational. One person has died of Ebola. And as Shepard Smith so famously said, well, he said 52,000 people died.
It's actually closer to 36,000, but hey.
36,000 people died of influenza, and all you have to do is go take the influenza shot.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do that, and that's not headlines that 32,000 people die of a communicable disease. But when one person dies of a communicable disease.
Shut down all the airports.
Right.
All right, so let's not gloss over the fact that Ebola is scary. It is scary, but let's take it seriously, not take it incredibly emotionally.
But then the Chinese are pumping money, and the experiment continues. Go ahead.
There's one piece here. You mentioned this, and it's a big deal. Our coverage of the Ebola outbreak, it's a serious issue. Please don't misunderstand me there. It's a serious issue. It's serious in Africa. It may cause some failed nation states there. But we're talking about 4,700 people have died so far. And when we're talking about an average of people that die from the flu of 36,000, we're a year in the United States, not worldwide. We're talking about kind of ridiculousness when we're looking at this. And the caller mentioned Greece in the middle of it. Greece is another one of those red herring issues. Greece is less than 1% of the gross domestic product of the European Union. It is tiny. Yes, it is a basket case. It is probably never going to be anything but a basket case. It hasn't been anything but a basket case.
It hasn't since World War II.
I mean, even before that, you got to go back to Athens and Sparta, and then it wasn't really even one country. It was a lot of little city-states.
It was a little bitty European Union.
Right. It was a tiny little European Union that was constantly fighting itself.
And didn't work and got smashed by the Romans.
And yeah, and the Persians kept coming in and stepping on them. And they.
The last time it worked is when the Romans were running it.
Right. And so thinking of Greece and saying Greece is a basket case again, well, no, it never stopped being a basket case. There's no point in any of the recovery that was happening anywhere else in Europe where the Greeks said, hey, look, we're recovering, because they weren't. So pointing at them and saying, look, they're in trouble. Well, yeah, it's kind of like going to the death row in a prison and go, look at all these people, they're in trouble.
It's kind of like saying Louisiana and Mississippi are basket cases.
Right.
They are, and they always have been.
That's just what happens there. And Louisiana's in a lot better shape than Greece, and that says a lot.
Well, yeah, and this is, like I said, like we've been saying all along, there are three experiments running here. The experiment that's going on in Europe, as I said, could have been designed by the Tea Party. It's states' rights and austerity, and balance the budget at all costs. And the Germans are driving that show.
Chinese side would have been designed by the
liberals.
The liberals, the extreme liberals.
The Democrats. And so we're
right in the middle.
Right down to the crunch on the internet, the restriction. It is really fascinating. The United States is running down the middle with a different experiment.
And working a lot better than the other two.
Ours is working better. And that is the thing that, we're in the middle road.
We're growing at a 4% rate. When you consider that we're the largest economy in the world, and we're growing at a 4% rate, if you compare that to Germany would have to grow at to get the same numbers, it would have to be like a 30% growth rate to get the same kind of growth that we're doing.
And there's another, there's a whole series of other little interesting things that are popping up out here. While we're let's segue to those if you don't mind. Let me talk about the United States economy, and then I don't want to talk to the global just a moment.
Okay.
Housing starts in September rose 6.3% from the previous month.
I was going to actually talk about that. That's pretty good.
They are up almost 18% year over year.
Yeah, 17.8% up over
and
a year
is,
ago.
That is the biggie in the economy. Are they anything like to where they once were? No. But they are recovering, and this is a powerful indication. Industrial production is up.
Mostly, just cover that one piece. Where it's mostly due to multifamily units, but single-family starts rose more than 1% as well.
So we
are up 11% over a year ago with single-family starts.
In some aspects of the economy, and there's going to be a lot of noise about this, particularly if you're in the upper half of the income makers in the United States, then your world is starting to look better. And the higher up in the income levels you go, the better your world is looking right now. If you're in the lower half, this is breaking into quarters. Of the lower 50%, the upper half of that one is kind of stagnant, and the bottom half's not doing so well. This is, by the way, normal.
Yeah, you were going to mention industrial production before I...
Well, houses include industrial production. But industrial production is up significantly, and it jumps
up
around...
4.4% over the last year, and that's...
Which pretty much parallels the growth in the gross domestic product of the United States. So we're... The United States economy is recovering nicely. Now, there's some things that people are afraid of, and those things came to the fore in the last couple of weeks. The market, by the way, in midweek, the Dow and the S&P 500 were down 9.5%, which is just right at official correction levels. In the newsletters that we've published twice, we published them quarterly, the last two quarter newsletters...
there should be a correction any moment.
Yeah, we're saying October. You know, why October? And I'm going to tell you something, I put this in the last two newsletters. Why were we saying we have a distinct possibility and even maybe a probability of a correction in October? It's not because of economic reasons. It's because 5 years after the second bottom in a secular bear market, and we had a secular bear market began in 2000.
Right.
It had a bottom in 2002. It had another bottom in 2009. You look back through history, secular bear markets have double bottoms, and 5 years after the second bottom, we get a market correction. And it is in October. And why? Because it's 5 years after, and it's in October. Yeah. There is no economic rationale to it.
There's a good psychological reason for it. We could get into that at great length.
Yeah, it's October.
It's October.
And
October's,
it's 5 years.
Yeah, October is when you... harvest for the winter. You start gathering your things in.
You don't start, you finish.
Yeah, you finish harvesting. You gather, and this goes way back in our culture. This is the time of year that you get ready for the winter, which means you're from Northern Europe. And you start feeling like, whoa, what's going on
Let's
here?
Let's hunker down.
Things are starting
days
to change.
Days are getting shorter. It's time for Samhain. It's time to have a big celebration of the dead.
The proper Gaelic pronunciation is Samhain, not Samhain.
I realize that, but it's spelled S-A-M. And nobody knows. You say Samhain, they think you're talking about female pigs, okay?
Right.
But the issue is that we're having this particular correction that's going on, which 9.5% is close enough to a correction for me. I'm going to say it's a correction.
Works for me. We can round that 0.5 is up to 10. We're good.
And for whatever it's worth, for 12 months, the numbers are either barely positive or whatever. The year to date, we have both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 are down for the year to date. So if you got your statement or you've looked at your portfolio and you see that it is down lower than you thought it was going to go in the near future, well, congratulations.
That's why.
It's October, 5 years after the bottom.
And let's explain something a little bit here. The economy, we're reading off all these figures of GDP growth, earnings growth, housing starts, unemployment, You go down the list, and it's all good news, except Ebola.
Well, and Ebola is pure at this
That's
point.
That's just what's on the news right now.
And there's a couple of issues to be concerned about. And the point is that if you're going to be concerned, the Germans should be terrified.
Yes.
Because Ebola has the potential for messing up the export-import market pretty badly because a tremendous amount of stuff comes and goes from Africa.
Yeah.
And the stuff makes money. Our economy, of the major economies on the planet, is the least dependent upon exports. And the Germans right now have the largest export surplus as a percentage of their GDP of any nation on the planet. And
China's actually a net importer at this point.
Right. And
that
so,
was a transition over the last 5 years.
But finished goods, compared with us, they're an exporter.
Right.
I mean, in other words, they export more to us than they import from us.
Correct.
But the point is that Germans should be terrified of this point of an economic downturn. And, of course, they're not. They're terrified of inflation because they're stuck in that. They're stuck on one track.
And the Chinese get a massive amount of their raw materials from Africa.
Yes, and the Chinese are deeply concerned. By the way, you're going to think this is a little crazy.
Yeah, I already do.
If you want to trace back the cause of a 20% drop in oil prices, which is why gasoline prices are coming down, it's because right now, mainly because of Ebola.
Yeah.
Because the Chinese use a phenomenal quantity of oil. The Chinese import from Africa. The Chinese would really not like to get Ebola in their country, so they are really hesitant to send people to or let people come back from Africa at this point. And so the potential for Ebola being out of control in Africa, which, by the way, is not like, you know, the potential of us getting an outbreak. We do not have an outbreak of Ebola in the United States. Two people becoming infected who had contact with a person who was dying did not constitute an outbreak. Now, we could get one, but it's very unlikely. There is a pandemic going on in Africa.
Yeah.
And according to the Centers for Disease Control, we have 60, well, not anymore, it was 66. We have about 60 days to stop it. And if we don't stop it in 60 days, it will sweep Africa, and the Chinese will not do well.
Yeah, this is something important to understand. After we've just said that it's not a big deal for the United States, Ebola, let me get this. If you live in Africa, the vast majority of people that live in Africa have dirt streets, and they have sewage that runs in the street. That's how you get Ebola. We don't have sewage in our street.
Dirt streets?
Dirt streets, sewage in the street.
Oh, but the dirt streets don't give you Ebola.
Well, they can. They absolutely can. If somebody has Ebola and they are doing what you do when you have Ebola.
And you mix it with the dirt.
You mix it with the dirt, and the next person that walks on that dirt doesn't know that it's different from any of the other mud in the area, and they go home and they take their shoes off if they're wearing shoes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
What makes you think they're wearing shoes?
And that may be that they just get it right there through their foot.
You could, yes. Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Person Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello.
Yeah, I was listening to your commentary on my other question, and it's interesting that Germany's failure is based on what the Tea Party wants. My question is, I also read...
We think it's funny, too.
Wall Street Journal said that we just had the lowest deficit in, I don't know, pick a number of years. And
I was curious,
do you ever see the United States running a surplus again, and what would it take to get to that point?
Yes. Oh,
okay.
I'll give you, I do expect us to see a surplus again.
I do as well.
And it won't be very long, and all we have to do is just keep growing the economy like we're growing.
Change nothing. Yeah, the deficit is growing slower than the GDP. That's the same as if somebody's making $100,000 a year, and their debt level is at $10,000 of that. And then the next year they make $110,000 a year, and the debt level's at $10,500. Eventually, the money that's coming in is going to be enough to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's not the way I want us to get to surplus again, but that's what we're on track for.
Frankly, if we just leave everything alone and don't cut taxes, We've had some tax increases, and I know
that... We also had a record year for tax revenue.
If you make over $250,000 a year, adjusted gross income, you undoubtedly have noted, well, if you haven't, you should, that despite the fact that we've had conservative Republicans controlling the House, we have managed to get a tax increase slipped through in little bits and pieces. And I, by the way, have no objection, even though I'll be frank with you and tell you that I'm one of those people who pay the higher taxes. I have no objection to that. Frankly, those people who make over $250,000 a year can afford to pay a little more to pay the debt down. Generally speaking, we're conservatives. I say we, and I mean that. We are conservatives, and we supported the war in Iraq. We supported the war in Afghanistan. I certainly did not raise an objection when we passed the prescription drug care benefit. And we have an obligation to pay, and there's some of us who probably would be less injured by a very tiny tax increase, which is what's occurred. And when I compare the taxes I pay to the taxes I would pay at my income in anywhere in Europe, anywhere in Japan, anywhere in Canada, and you start down the list of all the places that might be livable for me, I have come to the conclusion that the United States is the biggest tax haven in the world.
There are some exceptions to that.
But they're little bitty countries protected United States.
What? When it comes to the corporate tax rate.
No, U.S. I'm talking about me, Jeff McClure.
You, yeah. Okay, so... I mean, come at this. Let's try to come at this from a different direction.
Anyway, but let me just simply say that we're talking about the deficit,
right?
Surplus.
Let me hit that.
If we can avoid cutting taxes again, and the economy keeps growing, and we manage to avoid off-budget wars, probably in a few years we will be seeing surpluses that will pay down the debt, and I think that would be a very good thing.
The reason why the deficit is as low as it is this year, and low is relative, we're talking about going back to the Bush era before the deficits really started taking off after the recession. Because 2007, 2008, our recession just skyrocketed and stayed up there all through the Obama administration.
Our recession skyrocketed.
Yeah, that too.
Recessions are called, generally referred to as falling,
right,
not rising.
Right. Well, and this is actually exactly what we were talking about not very long ago. Maybe 5 minutes ago, we were talking about pumping money into the economy, and part of that was done by raising our deficit. So we're now in recovery. September, the end of September was the end of the fiscal year. We had an absolute record tax revenue. Over $3 trillion came into the United States government. That's why our deficit dropped. Not because spending went down, but because tax revenue went up. The spending has gone down. But that was a smaller percentage of it than the revenue coming up.
The Treasury is also making some big bucks off of some of those bonds they bought.
Right, and there's several hundred billion dollars came to the United States government not from tax revenue, but because the Federal Reserve pays the interest back to the government on the bonds that it bought. So they didn't have to pay. They paid the interest to the Federal Reserve, who then turned around and paid it back to them.
And then eventually the Federal Reserve, instead of buying bonds on the open market, is going to start selling them back onto the market.
At a profit.
And when that happens, that's, by the way, a really good way to raise interest rates.
Right.
And they're going to make huge profits off of that, which is why I'm so optimistic about us getting out of debt.
Right. It's going to happen. And when it happens, people are going to go, whoa, we're out of debt all of a sudden. How did that happen? And the reality is that it's not governmental. It is the government is not controlling the deficit as much as it thinks it is. The spending is there, the taxes are there, but it's like they're stumbling through the dark, and they just stumbled in the right direction by accident.
It's not that we'll be out of debt. I don't think we're going to get out of debt. I think what we're going to see is out of deficit. Now, again, here's the key. If when we go back into surplus, if we get a good leader, and I don't know who the next president is going to be, but if the next president of the United States, and I don't know whether Democrat or Republican, is a confident leader, not a consensus builder, not a person who's used to organizing, and I'm shooting, obviously, that's not the right term. I am criticizing our current president, by the way. Not a person who's used to finding out exactly what a group in an inner city wants and then formulating a plan to match what they want.
No.
But a leader, as was Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan, who's willing to step up and do things that are on the surface unpopular, but when they get good results, accept the popularity that comes with it. If we get somebody of that nature as a strong leader here in the United States for our next president, Democrat or Republican, we, in all likelihood, will see a surplus appear in our budget. If we get a surplus in our budget, it is so critical that we be non-ideological with it. I mean the ideology under the Bush administration with a Republican-controlled, conservative-controlled House and Senate was to go back to the idea that if we will cut taxes and put more money in people's pockets, then despite all the money we're spending, we will be better off in the future. Yeah, but when good times come, when we get a boom going on, running a little surplus to pay the debt down is exactly what both Keynes and Friedman called for. This is how you damp the economy to keep us from getting into an unsustainable boom. A very effective way without anybody playing with interest rates. The issue is if the government stops issuing new bonds and starts buying back the old ones, interest rates will go up. Why? Because there's a increased demand for something, and the bonds themselves become more valuable and so what we wind up with is the potential for higher interest rates, which tend to naturally slow the economy down. However, politicians will run against that stream. They will call, they will proclaim, let's cut taxes because we have a surplus. Why? Because people love to not pay their taxes. However, we, the people of the United States, have borrowed money, and when the good times come, and they will, it's a good time to start paying that money back, because I'm going to tell you, if you go far enough down the road, the bad times will come again and we'll need to borrow it again.
Right. If we don't have it taken care of by the time we get to that point, then we're going to have even more debt.
And you have told me we need to do commercials by tapping on your wrist.
I did.
So we're going to do commercials.
I haven't worn a watch in years, ever since I got a smartphone, and yet I still tap at my wrist to tell you what time it is.
And we still call it a phone because it was a telephone and we have to dial it and we say, dial this number.
Yeah. Can you dial that? No, there's no dial.
Anyway, we're going to break for commercials. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, by the way. And on the other side of commercials, if you have something you'd like to comment about, the telephone numbers are in here. 254-947-11.
That's our
business
number.
That's
not the right number.
It's 773-1400 locally.
Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-866-597-1400.
And I'm combobulated here. We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And let's see. The telephone numbers in here haven't changed. They're still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And probably ought to talk a little bit about the market again. This is Jeff McClure here, and this is my opinion. We are in a secular bull market. And a secular bull market has corrections within it. It has little minor bears, little mini bears, which are, what, raccoons? Isn't that a mini bear? And then a micro bear is a squirrel. It has squirrels and raccoons in it. But we had run-ups during the secular bear that went from 2000 through recently, during which the Dow and the S&P 500 never got back to the same level that they did at 2000. Interestingly enough, if we adjust for inflation, we haven't emerged from that dip because an inflation-adjusted and I'm going to use a weird one here, an inflation-adjusted nominal S&P 500 or Dow is still below where it was in 2000. Throw in dividends, and it's above. So we're somewhere around a break-even from the highs in the markets in the year 2000. And one of the things we can say with a great deal of confidence is when we come out of a secular bear and go into a secular bull, we don't stop at the break-even. We just keep churning forward. And I would go so far as to say that the second couple of months of this year and the first several months of next year look very much like they're going to be very, very, very good years to be in the market. Now, no guarantees there. I'm not making any promises because stuff happens. 2016 looks like the real sweet spot. So we've got, if you're a longer-term investor, which I hope anyone who listens to this show would be, this is a good time to be invested. We have a caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
My question is, you have real specific information on the number of people that have gone from to become millionaires in that same time period. And I understand that's not the segment of the market you work with, but on the lower end, how many went from into poverty level or lost status in the middle class as compared to what went up? In other words, what I'm saying, it looks like to me the gap just gets wider. The people that I know that are carpenters and plumbers and those type of people are not doing very well at all. And I understand it starts at the top and comes down, but it just seems to me that the gap is getting wider between us and them.
You hit something dead on the head. I said this earlier. If you're in the upper half of the income earners in the United States, you've done well to great, probably.
Yeah.
If you started off in the lower half of the incomers of the United States, you've done And if you happen to be a person who was working in one of the in the actual construction assembly business, and it doesn't make any difference if you're putting fenders on cars or nailing two befores together with a nail gun, you're in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, that's what I meant.
And I don't, I'm not going to for 1 second say to you that you're not. And no, it's probably not going to get a lot better.
Well, we've got good news. I mean, there is good news. But the good news is that housing starts are up. That's good news. But the reality is, and this is a tough pill to swallow, if you lived in Detroit and you thought you were going to make it, get another job at an auto manufacturing job, yet you're not going to get it. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So making a decision at this point in your life about what you want to do, you have the ability to retrain or to create something in your life that other people aren't doing. And that's really hard. That's really hard. I can't say that enough. That's really hard, but it has to happen.
And it's a matter of, I don't know if you noticed the trend over the years. Yeah, we got a big housing boom for a while. But how long have you been? What was it that you did before the recession?
Well, I'm not worried about me. I made my first million somewhere around 2000.
Okay. But
I lost a bunch of it. I'm a builder. That's what
okay.
I do.
Okay.
And I employ people that are, and nowadays, we've got illegal workers that will come in and do it for half the price of what American workers can do it for and still come out.
You know, you noticed something, I'm sure, if you were building houses. It took fewer and fewer people to build a house as the years went by.
Because you got a nail gun instead of hammers.
Yeah, and that is going to accelerate to the point where machines... Right now, I just watched a YouTube video the other day of a machine, a robot.
Yeah, making a house.
That literally built the entire structure of the house except for the finish on the inside.
Right. Tesla plants.
I've seen the modular deal come and they're going to build them in a factory like mobile homes and send them.
Well, not just that.
We're not talking about that.
I mean on-site.
We're talking about on-site with a robot doing all the work.
Yeah, if you look at Elon Musk's plants, the Tesla plants, there are robots making all the cars, and there's maybe one person for about 30 robots. And when you're talking about an on-site building project, you've seen the videos of the 3D printers, right?
Yeah.
Well, all you have to do is put wheels on those things.
And people have.
And people have. And when you're talking about laying concrete, when you're talking about putting wood down, if you can put down a substrate of some kind that isn't wood, what we're seeing is that technology, just like back in the early 1900s, everybody was working in the fields growing things. About 85% of the people in the United States worked in agriculture. The tractor came along. And in a very short period of time, those people that were working in the field weren't working in the field anymore. They went to the cities. They started working in factories. Now we have to figure out, if you're not designing things or repairing things, and eventually those things are going to be changed up too, technology will replace. This is the old story. John Henry was a steel-driving man. That's the story that's being replayed here. And it's not fun, but it's happening.
That's a good parallel.
Has the potential of raising everybody's standard of living. And if you think about this for just a second, when you were a kid and you knew somebody in the poverty level, I doubt they had air conditioning. And I really doubt that they had more than one car. And I really, really doubt that they had a television that had lots of cable channels. Right?
Yeah, they had none of those. Yeah.
Right.
Today, people in poverty.
Right. Now, the poverty level includes all those things. And nobody wants to be in the poverty level. Let me get that real clear out there. I'm not saying it's easy.
Oh, I don't
to
know.
Be...
Some people like being there.
I'm not saying it's easy to be poor. But the standard of living has come up. And even when I was a child, looking back, people that didn't have a lot of money were missing meals. And it's harder to miss meals today. Because
you have to work at it.
You have to work at it. I mean, you can do it. Don't get me wrong there. You can do it. But you really kind of have to work at it. There are meals out there for you. And the standard is up. Air conditioning in the summer in Texas is expected. If you don't have it, CPS can show up and take your kids. So because there are means to get the air conditioning. That's the sort of thing while the gap in the wealth is there, we're also raising the standard for everybody. So there's good silver linings in the middle of the really bad muck. If you've run a business as a builder, then you know you got to adapt, and you got to adapt pretty quick. Otherwise, the demand goes away, and if you're still building, then you just lost a lot of money.
So you hear that little chuckle right there?
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Builders have a tendency, and you probably have experienced this, builders have a tendency to keep building when the demand goes away and then discover they can't sell the houses. But you are completely correct. And the people who have, anybody who has a repetitive, manual task to do, I don't know how old you are, but I think probably, and I'm old enough that normally people start thinking seriously, very seriously about retiring at my age. But I can tell you that within my lifetime, I expect to see most manual labor jobs, relatively low skill manual labor jobs to disappear. Because it'll be cheaper to do them with a robot, if you will. Robotics is growing so fast, so amazingly. If you can have a robot that can drive a car, which we've shown can happen,
doing that.
Then if you think about driving a car...
Or driving a truck,
to get one that can build a house is a piece of cake. It's just a matter of doing it. And, yeah,
You said that. I got to catch you on that. To get one that can build a cake is a piece of cake, too. That's already happening.
Right, it's already happening, though. The fact is that my favorite example is the guy who used to bolt on fenders, and his father bolted on fenders, and his grandfather bolted on fenders in Detroit, who was getting $80 an hour to bolt on fenders. Never, ever going to happen again. And it isn't pretty. And Jake said in the 1930s, actually in the 1920s is when the agricultural depression set in. And in the 1930s, the factory workers wound up with the same thing. And we're seeing it again, and that's just reality. And we don't like it, but it's there.
Well, and parts of it are really good because it causes us to retrain and look at things in a new way. If you're not thinking ahead, then you're not thinking.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Hey, one thing. You're right about the standard of living. I've built churches in Mexico and places to where they live, you know, make $5 a year if they're lucky.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And
when I was a kid, there was a lot of people missed meals. And now they're not, unless they're drug addicts.
Right.
I tell people who complain about the United States, and another irony, it was the liberals complaining about the United States back when Merle Haggard was saying, "I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee."
Yes, sir.
And now it's the conservatives who complain about the United States, and I've told them both the same thing. Man, you won the lottery. You were born here in the last half or sometime in the vicinity of the last half of the 20th century or the beginning, and as a result, you won the lottery just by
being here, you know? You're absolutely right. All they need to do is travel anywhere in the world, and if you're dissatisfied with the United States, you're an idiot.
Yeah, your mind changed real fast.
You and I agree completely. I just had a guy who retired who is a conservative and had some complaints about the United States, and he made a big loop around parts of the world, and I asked him what his conclusion was for making the loops. He said, "I'm sure glad I live in America." And I said, "Why?" And he said they made this trip through the Panama Canal and they went all these places, and he said almost everywhere we went, the police had submachine guns and were patrolling vigorously to keep the bandits away. And he said, "You come back to the United States and the police carry pistols and rarely draw them.
And the citizens carry submachine guns."
That's true. And if you think that the police are oppressive in the United States, just go to Mexico or any other country in the world.
They'll
shoot you in a heartbeat for nothing.
And the issue is just give thanks that you were born in this particular country at this particular time.
Amen.
And enough of my rattling.
Yeah, we're about out
Thanks
of time.
For calling.
Thanks
a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate you and your show. I listen to it faithfully.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
I always agree with you.
Thanks. All right, we're about out of time for this particular show.
Mm-hmm. You just called it a show?
I did. You repeat it enough, it's peer pressure. It's like, I don't like to follow the herd.
Every once in a while. You are an outlier. You do not succumb to peer pressure.
I just did. It's a horrible thing.
Well, if you would like to give our office a call for whatever reason, tell us something to talk about on the show or talk about investments or whatever, we have a voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week, and you can contact us locally at 947-1111, 947-1111. We got that number so I could remember it.
Or you can also reach a toll-free, that same voicemail, 1-800-914-7526. That's 1-800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com.
They can email us?
If they have the interwebs. Jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. There are podcasts available there, although this particular program did not record.
It didn't?
No, so you're going to have to... Hopefully somebody else has it recorded. Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.